This is a podcast from ABC Overnights.
Homelessness is sadly on the rise across Australia. The statistics are somewhat disheartening. The number of people experiencing homelessness has risen 14% since 2011. That's 116,400 people, according to a new interactive analysis of homelessness data by RMIT and ABC Fact Check. The rate of homelessness throughout the nation increased from 47.6 per 10,000 Australians in 2011 to 49.8 in 2016. Indigenous Australians remain vastly overrepresented, but the little bit of good news is that rate is declining. 32% of Australia's homeless population live in New South Wales, 21% in Victoria, 19% in Queensland, 12% in the Northern Territory, 8% in Western Australia, 5% in South Australia, and 1% each in the ACT and in Tasmania. Rough sleepers are the most visible face of homelessness, but they represent only a fraction. That's 1 in 14 of the homeless population. Kate Colvin's with us this morning. She's the spokesperson for the Council to Homeless Persons. Kate, good morning and thank you for joining us.
No worries. Good morning, Tony. Good morning, all your listeners.
How do you define homelessness?
Look, it's people who don't have a secure tenancy, don't have a safe place to live. So we're not talking just about people who don't have a roof over their head, but also if you're just couch surfing on your sister's couch or your friend's couch, you know, you don't have a secure tenancy, might fall apart, and so you can't really sort of make a home in that kind of situation. And another kind of situation that we call homelessness is when people are really overcrowded, and this is something that we're seeing a lot more of, where you might have three families to make ends meet all crowding into one three-bedroom house and, you know, a whole family kind of sharing a room or, three or four single people kind of sharing a room in a rooming house type arrangement. So those kind of situations, you know, mean, you know, children don't have room to play, people don't have room for sort of normal family relations. It's very crowded and uncomfortable, and conflict can arise in that sort of situation. So we would include that as being homeless as well.
And those sort of circumstances, I imagine, reduce your sense of security, privacy, safety, as you say, just that whole ability to control your living space.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine being a high school student living in, you know, a situation where you've got three families crowded into one house, where you're sharing a room with your five-year-old, you know, sibling and your mum and your dad and, you know, maybe another sibling as well. I mean, you're not going to get anything done by way of homework, and, you know, you might not even really be able to sleep so very well. So it's really not a proper kind of living arrangement.
Are the vast majority of Australians, through no fault of their own, largely ignorant of the causes of homelessness and the predicament it puts the homeless in?
Look, absolutely. And I think people often have the misconception that it's some thing that people have done with their own lives that's led to homelessness. You know, and perhaps 40 years ago, it was the case that it was, you know, tended to be more that stereotypical image of the older guy with a alcohol problem who was experiencing homelessness. But the reality now is that this is largely about families, about singles, but really across the community, and it's very much connected to what's happening in our housing market. So, you know, it's very affordability of rental accommodation has declined across pretty much every location, but very much so in our capital cities. And so if you're on a lower income or even an income that's infrequent, you know, I think that's more and more common, isn't it? Like people have casual work, they might have, you know, work for a few weeks and then not for a little while. And, you know, the problem is the rent has to be paid every 2 weeks. So, you know, low income or insecure income, people just can't manage in the rental market. They might find themselves in a situation where they have to move out of somewhere where they are, and they look around and they just can't find anywhere to rent that they can afford, or you know, wealthier households are sort of competing for the same properties and the property goes to someone on a higher income. So people in that's actually the most common way that people find themselves homeless.
And in contrast, or the reverse of that, that stereotypical image of the older man in the dirty old overcoat with the brown paper bag and the bottle of beer or whatever in it, it's young people up to the age of 25 who are one of the biggest groups in homelessness, aren't they?
Yes, so 40% under 25. Now, a number of those are children. As I was saying before, we're talking about family, a lot of family homelessness, and the main driver of family homelessness is family and domestic violence, and then combined with that housing problem. So family has to flee, just can't find somewhere that they can afford to rent, and particularly, you know, a woman-headed household often on a Centrelink benefit if they're fleeing, or at least a disruption to work in that circumstance. So a decreased income and having to form a new household, and that's very financially difficult. But then we also have a group who are, that in that 18 to 25 or 16 to 25 group, and often again problems with violence, needing to leave home, but and also if you're on youth allowance, that's actually the lowest Centrelink payment, and even if people are looking for share accommodation, you won't find anything in Sydney in a share house that's less than sort of $250 for a room, and that's going to take pretty much 100% of your Centrelink payment. So that's not workable. And then in a rural area, or regional area, sometimes you won't be able to find, a one-bedroom place. There's a lot of parts of Australia where you don't really have one-bedroom apartments. So it can be very difficult for people in that circumstance. And so, again, young people on low incomes do really struggle and find themselves homeless.
And despite there being many refuges, are they hopelessly inadequate when it comes to their ability to deal with the sheer number of people wanting to stay the night, have a shower, wash some clothes, that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, there's a crisis accommodation refuges around the country, but many more people needing those places than there are places available. So what most commonly happens with people coming into homeless services is they may be able to be put up in a sort of cheaper motel or into a rooming house for a small period of time. But, sadly not until their housing has been found. So, the resources are just stretched so thin that someone might be put up for three nights and then not be able to be accommodated after that. So that's a very unfortunate circumstance, but I'm very sorry that that's the situation that there is now, because there's just so many people coming through the door.
What's your reaction when people suggest that some rough sleepers, some homeless people, don't actually mind their circumstances? They may have been offered somewhere to go and they've declined it.
Well, the thing is that it's the question about what they've been offered. So as I was saying before, people will get offered three nights in a motel. We're not talking about the Hyatt. These are not so very much the cheaper end of hotel accommodation, and or into a rooming house. Now, the reality is that those are often not very safe places. And so if people have been through that that sort of mill of kind of going into motels and rooming houses, they may already have had experiences where there's offered assaults, there's sometimes all sorts of very, can be quite difficult environments. You know, there's always going to be a few people who have problems with drugs, and then that can be quite frightening for others. And so, you know, they're not very safe places. And if someone has been homeless for a long time, they may get into a pattern where they feel safer actually on the street. But there's another thing there, Tony, which is, you know, we had that whole Royal Commission into institutional childhood abuse, and I think what we really saw really clearly was a pattern, a very consistent pattern, where people who'd experienced trauma in their formative years really had very significant challenges with their mental health. So they would talk about having those recurring sort of nightmares coming in their head, you know, all the time, and drug and alcohol use was one way to manage those experiences that they were having. And so what we see is that people who are long-term chronic rough sleepers are actually that group who've had those terrible experiences in childhood are overrepresented among that group. So we've got a set of people who are really, society has not done well by them, and they're struggling very much as a consequence. And another group that's really overrepresented, and for some similar reasons, in long-term rough sleepers is veterans. So people who have, you know, really post-traumatic stress from their experiences as soldiers.
So you're talking about people who served in the Australian Defence Force and are no longer in defence, but they've been on active duty and they suffer as a result.
Yes.
Very complicated situation. Nothing's ever straightforward, is it? Matt's called in from Eden on the far south coast of New South Wales. You think we need more Housing Commission homes, Matt?
Yes, down in Eden, roughly in the early 70s, the state government, I think it was, they bought or had a lot of land, and they built approximately 200 Housing Commission homes. And people from outside the area, surrounding areas, moved into those houses, you know, who were not wealthy and at the lower end of the socioeconomical scale.
Mm-hmm.
And over the time, you know, those people and their families were able to gain employment and become valued members of the community, you know. And so I had a look on the computer before, and there has been a real decline since 2006, I think it started, that it's basically stopped, you know, the Housing Commission situation to help those people.
We need more of it, because you've seen it work there in Eden. All right, Matt, thank you very much for calling with your thoughts. So, Kate, if I can ask you, $9 billion has been spent since 2009 through the National Affordable Housing Agreement. So why is homelessness in Australia getting worse?
Well, that's so it's about $3.3 billion a year. So the thing is that social housing, it costs money to operate. And so this is the thing that government and the federal government sort of don't talk about. But as social housing has become more and more targeted to people on lower and lower incomes, the rental income that comes into social housing authorities is less than what it costs to run them. There's the maintenance cost, there's, you know, the staffing costs, rates, all sorts of costs. So that's the amount of resources it takes to keep the current stock that we have on the ground. And we haven't seen new investment into growth for social housing since 2008, when we had the global financial crisis, and the government at the time then put $500 million into social housing. That saw a brief period in which social housing grew as a proportion of all stock, and we saw immediate benefits to that. You know, rough sleeping declined, affordable housing opportunities opened up for people on low incomes, and so homelessness fell during that period. But then, you know, it was just a one-off commitment. So when the money you know, ran out, the growth in social housing stopped, and the homelessness began to increase again as a consequence. So, you know, that's really the main, that is the most powerful tool that we have with to end homelessness for people is, you know, if they can go into a housing opportunity that they can afford, and social housing, because it's a proportion of your income, you know, you generally pay 25-30% of your income. That is far more affordable than the private market, and that means someone can be securely housed. And as Matt was saying, you know, someone can be in a difficult circumstance, you get them securely housed, and you know, they start working,
that turn their lives around and contribute, because that's what the vast majority of them want to do. They want the pride, they want the job, they want to support themselves, not to be classified as homeless. Is it correct? I think I read a figure there's up to a shortfall of up to 500,000 affordable homes across the nation.
Yeah, so the wait list is around 400,000. The wait list I think is at around 250,000. I don't have that figure in front of me, but it's a very significant number of people who are just on waiting lists. But the thing is that the waiting list doesn't represent as many people as need the housing, because, you know, if you might wait 10 years, so people don't put themselves on the list. Actually, I think the number you're saying, 450,000, yes, that's the shortfall of housing economists have kind of identified that as the shortfall of low-cost rental market across both social and private rental housing, like the shortfall of housing that's affordable to people on low income. So that's it's a big number, isn't it?
It certainly is, no doubt about it. Kate Colvin is the spokesperson for the Council to Homeless Persons. And also joining us this morning for our talking point on homelessness is Jenny Smith, the Chair of Homelessness Australia. And you're welcome to join us. The number is 1-300-800-222. Just reminding you, the text line is not working. So if you're sending me texts and I'm not reading it, they're not getting through. The text line is out of order. So give us a call, 1-300-800-222. Perhaps you've experienced homelessness. What was it like for you? Was it a situation you thought you'd never find yourself in, but you did? How did you deal with it? And maybe you are homeless now and you want to tell us your circumstances and what you think would help improve the situation. As I said, Jenny Smith, Chair of Homelessness Australia, is with us. Morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
We're coming to the end of National Homelessness Week at the moment. How has the week gone? What's been achieved?
Well, we kicked off the week with a massive national conference of service providers, people with a lived experience of homelessness and other interested community stakeholders. And we were able to have some international guests join us, one of whom was Jura Kakkonen from Finland, who told us about how they have essentially ended rough sleeping in Finland by doing precisely what Matt talked about when he called in, which was recognising that they had let the amount of social housing that they had in Finland slip below a functional level and heavily invest back into social housing, and also the support that some people need in order to sustain that housing, people with multiple and complex problems like mental illness and other sorts of challenges in sustaining a home. But predominantly the effective thing was to boost the social housing stocks. And Ewa's very clear message to us here in Australia was fix your social housing system.
You've actually urged the federal government to tweak taxation settings in relation, or there's been urging of various agencies like yours to get the federal government to tweak taxation settings in relation to negative gearing and capital gains tax. What would you like to see change as far as things that are within the power of the federal and or state governments?
Well, look, I think that's a tremendously important point, because I think there are probably about 25 really important things that need to be done simultaneously to turn our homelessness problem around. And we're a little inclined as a community to talk about them one at a time and talk about whether one of those things is going to actually be effective. But, you know, housing market is the biggest housing, is the biggest market in the country. Tackling the way we've set it up and changing it is a really complicated thing unless it's done in a very thoughtful and sophisticated way. There will be, you know, side effects that we won't want to have. You know, we talk about a market economy and, you know, creating a situation where housing can trickle down, which it hasn't been, to people on low incomes. And yet we have two taxation settings in place, negative gearing and capital gains tax, that play to the needs of investors. They don't play to the needs of people on low incomes trying to get into housing. So it's inflating our housing market and making housing a preferred commodity, not the shelter that people need. So that's a big role for the federal government, as is directly investing in social housing through the states and territories. The states and territories have got a big job to do in recognising that every time they do a housing development or a housing redevelopment, that part of that needs to be housing that's affordable to workers on low incomes, and also part of it needs to be housing that is subsidised for people on our lowest incomes. And that's
aren't there policies like that already happening?
Oh, look, there's little dribs and drabs.
Right. So if a developer builds...
There's a tiny little bit of it in the ACT. There's a tiny little bit of it in South Australia, and I think there's a pilot on public land about to happen in Victoria. But, you know, this is a big thing. It's one thing to catch up that shortfall of around 500,000 properties that Kate just mentioned, but it's another to put a mechanism in place that would keep us there if we could catch up. And without inclusionary zoning, we will just keep falling further and further behind.
Okay, just hold the line there for me, Jenny Smith, Chair of Homelessness Australia. Charles has called in from Oakley to make a contribution, 1300 800 222. What do you think we need to do, Charles?
I just think we need to, the costs notwithstanding, I still think we still need to have public housing and continue to have public housing. And it says there's a lot of costs with maintenance and things like that, but I think you're going to find that anywhere you go, you have housing. And I think it's, I mean, we shouldn't just see the cost, but, you know, some things can be a public benefit without, you know, necessarily trying to get a
make
return.
A profit. Or,
you know, you get a return or whatever, yeah. You know. And so I'm just wondering, is it a long time to apply for public housing to get on the waiting list, or if you're on the waiting list for a long time?
Okay, well, let me put that to Jenny Smith. Are there long waiting lines?
Yes, look, as Kate and one of your callers mentioned earlier, I mean, I'd say the reduction in investment in public and community housing has been going on for about 30 years, which is a terrible shame. It's been a wasted opportunity during that 30 years of great prosperity. So really all we've got is what we invested in 30 or 40 years ago and that one-off injection around 2008, which gave us about a year's worth of public and community housing. So the amount that we have in our community has just been going down and down. So in somewhere like Victoria, the very best you could hope for would be a 10-month wait, and that would be if you were the person in the direst, most complex situation and the highest priority.
Hmm. If you have a question for our guests or a point to make, 1300 800 222, 1300 800 222, what is your own experience of homelessness? Tell us. You might have an idea that you think could improve the situation dramatically, 1300 800 222. I'm just going back to government support. To be cynical, I doubt there are votes in policies to address homelessness. So do we need a bipartisan approach to homelessness from our governments across Australia and real national leadership on this?
Is Kate there?
Jenny, do you want me to ask Kate that? Hang on a second. Get to my other phone here. Kate, what do you make of it?
Look, Tony, absolutely we need bipartisan support, and we've working together with a number of other organisations, around 100 organisations around the country, have launched a campaign called the Everybody's Home Campaign, which seeks to put pressure on the government to do exactly that, really to fix our broken housing system, to make sure that public and community housing investment happens, to fix our tax policies so that every Australian has a home.
Now, to be fair, the Turnbull government provided a number of housing affordability initiatives in its 2017 budget, increasing the capital gains tax discount for affordable housing and allowing first home buyers to use tax benefits of superannuation to save a deposit. Kate, do we need more of those sorts of measures?
Look, some of those sorts of measures won't really help low-income earners. So, you know, it's not really helpful to have a little bit of using your super fund to help you buy a home, you know, when house prices are so far out of reach that if you're on a low income, you know, there's just no realistic prospect in many of our capital cities of someone being able to buy that home. So the real problem is in the rental market and delivery of public and community housing for people so that people can have an affordable place to rent. Now, if you've got an affordable place to rent, chances are if you want to move into home ownership, you might be able to save. So that's really the most effective strategy.
All right. Kate's given us Chris has given us a call from Coffs Harbour. You have some experience of being homeless, Chris.
Oh, yes. Good morning, Tony.
Morning.
Look, my partner, who had severe mental health problems, burned our house down back in 2013, and I found myself homeless after that, and it was only that my family stepped in and helped me that I wasn't on the streets, whereas my partner, and I thank the mental health institutions for this, he was given accommodation after he came out of the mental health unit, and he was given so much help, but I was given no help at all. Centrelink was very unhelpful, and because we live I live outside Coffs Harbour, but the rental market isn't very big in small country towns, and the rents are very expensive. And as I was still working, I was able to sleep on my elderly parents' floor, and with their help, and only with their help, I was able to rent a small house. But I wasn't able to share with anybody because I would have lost my rental allowance.
Centrelink. It was built into the Centrelink, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
I was only working part-time, but the rents here were so expensive, and it was, only for my very elderly parents who were in their 90s, I would have found myself on the street as well. And I think that Centrelink and government agencies really have to step up and help people.
And you're a classic example of someone who one day was in reasonably good circumstances despite dealing with the challenges of your partner's mental health issues, and then 24 hours later homeless.
Oh, absolutely.
Which goes to show it can happen to any of us.
Yes, definitely. And my circumstances are better now. But
many people don't have the parents or the support services they can turn to.
No.
In an hour of need, albeit for a while, as sounds like might have been the case, till you got back on your feet.
Oh, absolutely. It was a month before I could find somewhere to live.
Mm.
And being faced with that, I just felt really, really sorry for people who are in the circumstances where they can't afford to rent something, and there's not much rental accommodation around, as happens in small country towns.
Yeah, a classic example. Don't look down on the homeless. It may just happen to you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good on you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
and nice to know circumstances have improved. Thank you very much for sharing. And I want to go to Kay now, who's on the line from the Sunshine Coast. You've been on a public housing waiting list for a few years, Kay.
14 years.
14.
Yes, and been assured that I'm not eligible. I'm getting up towards 80. My biggest concern is at 80, you'd like to know where you're going to spend the rest of your life.
But if you've been told you're not eligible, why stay on the waiting list?
Well, they advise me to fill it in every year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just in case some of your circumstances may change and suddenly you qualify.
Yeah.
Do you reckon the 14 years on the waiting list will count then?
Probably not.
Mm.
I pay $300 a week rent out of my age pension.
That's a fair whack, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
And what do you reckon your chances are of somehow being considered eligible?
Well, every time I take in the papers, they say that I'm not eligible. I live solely on the age pension, and luckily I've been in this place that I've got for 10 years, but every time that comes up to renew your lease, you think, is it going to be renewed or whatever? And then you've got the job of packing up, as I said, nearly 80, and finding somewhere else.
Mm. And you've got to come up with a bond, and you've got to get the electricity turned on, and all of those services changed.
That's right.
It's a bit of the dog chasing the tail, isn't it, Kay?
It's just the insecurity of knowing where you're going to live.
You'd just like that peace of mind, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Yeah, after 14 years on a waiting list, sounds like you deserve it. Kay, thank you very much for sharing. David is with us now. You're actually homeless now, David.
Yeah, I'm living in a shed. What happened? In South Australia, they have three categories, basically. Category 3, Category 2. You won't never get a housing now in South Australia, but I managed to get up to Category 1, but I've been on it for nearly a year now, but I've been on the list for like 17 years. And when I was paying rent, I was paying $315 a week rent out of my unemployment benefits, and then they put me back to Category 2, so I had to go and live in a shed. That's what I'm like staying in now, living in a shed. So I can be put up to Category 1. They said they'll give me a housing pretty well soon.
So Category 1 puts you on the highest priority narrows the waiting list. Do you mind
Can I just say, a letter from the right politician, I'll have keys tomorrow for a premises. But because I've only got letters from doctors, government, workers and stuff like that, just keep getting thrown around. So there's something like 10,000 people in Category 1.
So, David, are you saying you went to your local MP, federal or state, and said, I need your help?
Yeah, I did. And then we got, like, the lady we've got in our area, because she's federal, she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't do it for me. So I need, like, to go and find, someone, in my area. I don't know. I've just been chasing my tail, and I've given up a house. Like I said, I was paying $315 a week.
Yeah.
So I gave up.
But you're not paying $315 for the shed.
No. I have to do like a trip over here once a month.
Hmm. Difficult circumstances indeed. Well, hopefully if you're in Category 1, you get into safe and warm and comfortable circumstances soon. David, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Jenny Smith, the Chair of Homelessness Australia. Is David right? Should homeless people go and see their MP, state or federal?
Well, that's an interesting suggestion. I actually haven't really heard of political intervention being helpful, but I think that's an indication of how desperate people are.
Mm.
I mean, there are many people like David living in dire and substandard circumstances just because the waiting list, the bar, I think as Kate mentioned earlier, is just so high for people to jump over for eligibility. I mean, Kay's story is Kay's in the group of the fastest growing group of homeless in our community, older women, and that makes sense with our ageing population and also the circumstance of women who can be frequently in and out of the workforce, earning less money over the working lifetime because of that, having less superannuation, having a change of circumstances later in life, which means that the family home is no longer available to be retired into, and in very difficult circumstances. I think there are policies that governments can adopt. I mean, Victoria has recently made a priority group over 55s, older people, and I think that is sensible. But unless we grow that supply of public and community housing to actually meet the demands of Kay and David and the 200,000 other people in similar circumstances, and that's a minimum figure, as Kate said, right around our country, you know, we're going to have more and more very tragic tales to tell.
As the lucky country, should we be able to achieve all of that?
We are the fifth richest country in the OECD.
Should this issue be addressed before we build new sporting stadiums at $1 billion a time?
Well, I think we do have to think about housing as infrastructure, as human infrastructure for a healthy community. And we are bringing a future upon ourselves which is going to be much more complex than it needs to be. If we don't make sure that the people with the lowest incomes in our community can afford to put a minimum standard of shelter over their heads, then that will flow on into the opportunities for those children. You know, 38% of the people who are homeless every night in this country are young people under the age of 25.
Yeah, it's alarming, isn't it? Most people think that the homeless would be older and so on and so forth, but as Kate told us earlier, it's not necessarily the case. Kate Colvin from the Council to Homeless Persons. Is David right? Should more homeless people be knocking on the doors of their local members of parliament?
Look, we're encouraging everyone to try and make contact and, you know, to really engage politically and going to meet your local member of parliament and telling them that you don't think homelessness is okay and they should be investing in social housing is a great way to go about it.
All right. Let's go to Gary from Swan Hill because I think he has a slightly encouraging story for us this morning. You were homeless at some stage or other, but your circumstances have improved, Gary?
Yeah.
What can you tell us?
Right. I lived in a secure home life for right up until I was about 40-year-old. And then my mum died and the circumstance had just changed. And I went from there, lived in a hotel, and then I had a gut full of that. I went and saw a certain person and I ended up going into a nurse's home in Manangatang. And I was just thinking there must be a whole heap of nurses' homes around the Victoria. That's in Swan Hill. It's a three-storey building. It's vacant now because they don't train nurses like that.
Sorry, you're not saying nursing homes. You're saying nurses' homes. These were the homes that were built and attached to hospitals around the nation as accommodation for nurses for the hospitals. You reckon there's a lot of those that are perhaps lying empty and could be used?
That's right, yeah.
Is that where you found accommodation?
I didn't one time. I had to go through it because I'm on a disability pension. I went and saw a doctor and he got me a place out in the, well, let's say, Nangatang. But anyway, I sit there out there because they were talking about closing the hospital down and I got private rent. I rented a flat for just short of 18 years. And anyway,
tough times in the past, Gary, by the sounds of things, but fortunately circumstances appear to have improved, and by the sound of things we've lost the line there to Gary as well. Let's go to Brett in Toomer. What's the view of a rural community, Brett?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of empty houses on farms, you know, as, like, there used to be 12 dairy farms in this valley and now there's only two, and the biggest farming families are taken over, and, you know, and then there's all these houses that they could sell, but you're only allowed to sell a house and 100 acres, like you can't sell a house and 5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if you've got an 800 acre place with two houses on it because, you know, your parents have gone to retirement village, you can't just sell it. And so I thought the government could, buddy, you know, and they can't find workers in some country areas too, you know.
That's true. If many of those places are empty, we've got an echo on the line there, Brett, so I'll just take myself to Kate Colvin from the Council to Homeless Persons. I suppose many of us would understand that there would be empty houses on properties, but then if people who are homeless are currently moved into those, they need transport and ability because there's no public transport, that it creates an extra set of problems, doesn't it, Kate?
Well, there's not much point being on housing that you can't, you know, you need to be able to get to the shops, you might need to be able to get to services. If you're working, you need to be able to get to work. So there's not much point being, you know, on a property, you know, in a house on a sort of little rural property if you can't get around to the places that you need.
Heartbreaking, you know, to think that they're there and empty, doesn't it? And the lifestyle that comes with living in rural areas and could be employment opportunities, as Brett said, but it's certainly not going to be the answer for everyone who needs some accommodation, is it?
No, but, it might suit someone in that community who's got a car, but, you know, really we've got the biggest problems that we have are in the cities and people needing accommodation that means that they can participate in the economy and be near jobs as well.
Okay, I'll come back to both you and Jenny Smith for summing up remarks, and I suppose what the wider community can do to help address this issue might try and make things a little bit better. But a couple of quick calls. Firstly, Michael's in Bankstown, and you take us back to the issue of public housing, Michael.
I kind of do return to it because I can totally understand some of the people who've called in tonight are clearly, obviously suffering and in desperate need of housing. I'm blessed by the fact that I've been in public housing. I waited 15 years before I was able to access it. So I recognise that the waiting lists are extraordinarily long.
And the frustration that must go with it.
Absolutely. But also there's a social difficulty that goes along with not being able to put people into positions. And I'm living in a street now where there are about five different developments that are going on, and you could easily offer maybe two or three units from every block, every new development block, to a homeless person. I don't expect that necessarily to fix the problem, but you know what it would do? It would get a person who is homeless off the street, but it would also encourage them to enter into community,
yes,
because it would take away the stress of not being homeless.
Gives them self-esteem and a sense of security, and that lifts people up, no doubt about it. Michael, thank you for your contribution. Alex will be our last caller on the topic this morning in Brisbane. You think the government's got its spending priorities wrong?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's look at the fact that we've got...
Can't hear you, Alex. Are you...
Sorry, can you hear me now?
That's better, yeah.
Sorry. Look, we spend billions of dollars on illegal immigrants in this country that are sitting on Manus Island and Nauru, and let's be honest, we need to start looking after our own backyard. I mean, we get a lot of African immigrants here. Now, they're the ones that sometimes aren't actually working. They're sitting around drinking coffee and you know, they've got homes.
Plenty of people born in this country doing the same thing, though, Alex.
Well,
I don't think you can particularly demonise one group in this because the homelessness are represented right across the board. But, and I think we might leave that there because we're starting to run out of time. But if I can come back to you, Jenny Smith, Chair of Homelessness Australia, and I know this is a tough call, but in about 60 seconds or so, how can the wider community help address this issue and make a difference?
Well, look, I think the most important thing that... we need to understand is, as a community, we're still tending to think that the person who is experiencing homelessness is the problem themselves. But the problem is that we have not invested in housing for people on low incomes. So we just need to accept that all sorts of governments over the last 30 years, other than the big exception in around 2008, have played a role in that.
So I don't think the time is now for finger pointing. The time is now for action, and we need to see that every time we go to an election, that the party that we want to vote for has got a national affordable housing strategy and a national homelessness strategy as part of its platform, and a genuine intention to do something about this very complicated but really important problem, which is going to be dragging our community down. You know, we are a wonderful community. We are a rich community. This is not a problem that we should be having, other than that, you know, anybody who experiences homelessness, it should be, you know, brief, once off, and very well supported.
If we can set our mind to it, we may not necessarily solve the problem completely, but we can put an almighty dent in it?
Oh, this problem is absolutely solvable. Finland's just done it. Why aren't we doing it?
All right. Jenny Smith, Chair of Homelessness Australia, thank you very much. And also a final word from Kate Colvin for Council to Homeless Persons. What is your message to the rest of us who are not homeless, who'd like to try and make a difference, Kate?
Look, I agree with everything Jenny said, and just invite everyone to be a part of calling on government for those changes. So people can go to everybodyshome.com.au and join the campaign and be a part of saying we want better for our community.
everybodyshome.com.au?
Absolutely.
And at the very least, I heard on another ABC program a homeless man being interviewed, and he was asked, what would make a difference to you in your day? And he was a rough sleeper. He said, if people just didn't walk past and look the other way, if they just looked at me and said, hello, I'm not asking for anything from them, I don't want money, etc. I'd just like people to see me. Is that something you hear?
Absolutely, and I think that that's part of, you know, just recognising that we all share this community together, all of us, and being kind and welcoming of each other in our everyday lives is very important.
Very kind of you to join us so early in the morning. We do appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Kate Colvin, spokesperson for the Council to Homeless Persons, says the end of National Homelessness Week comes some very thought-provoking ideas and calls, much for us to all think about as a result.
This is a podcast from ABC Overnights.